Shout out to Mad Nice. Tom's in the building.
What's good, man?
Dog training.
Avoiding it for now.
Yeah. You wait till you have children. Even worse.
Yeah, that's better. That's better. Can you hear me all right, yeah?
Yeah, we all good. We all good. Shout out to Press One, South the Menace. That's what we do.
Yeah, what's good, people? Yeah, it's been a minute.
It's been a little while since you've been able to join.
I know, man. No, you're running things now. I'm just kind of, I'm being happily spectating, do you know what I mean? It's like
Rob Gunn the Orcs.
something like that. What's Verb saying then?
He's online. Give him a shout. You want to do it? You can do the intro. You can do the classic Tom intro.
Oh, man, it's been a while. So, yeah, welcome back to Wednesday Night Live, Shotgun the Orcs. Yeah, it's been a minute. We thought we'd kind of try things out with these little kind of Instagram live sessions rather than kind of a podcast. It's a bit more of an undertaking. Should have done this in the first place, really. But tonight we have the legend that is Verb T in the house when he decides to join. Mm-hmm. We've got myself and Rob the intern, who's actually taking over things from now on. So you'll probably be seeing less of me and more of him, which is, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
It depends on the day, I suppose.
Yeah, man, exactly. How you been anyway, man?
Me, I'm all right. Yeah, just cracking on. Just working on my art.
How was the gig the other night? We'll get into that a bit more later.
It was good. No, it was wicked. A lot of like familiar faces that I haven't seen for a while turned up. Some family turned up. Yeah, it's a good time. It's nice catching up with people and stuff like that. Me and Mick just did our thing. Good. Yeah, it was good. It was a good time. Enjoyed it.
Nice, man. What's Verb saying? And can you invite him in?
I can indeed. Let's get him on the go.
Give the people what they want.
That's it. They're not here for me and you waffling.
Yeah, exactly. We can just waffle on all night.
As soon as we started talking, people are like...
People don't want to see that.
Nah, not at all.
There he is.
Hey.
Well, greetings, man. How are you keeping, all right?
Not too bad, man. How are you guys doing?
Chilling. Not too bad.
Not too bad, man. We were just talking about the Bournemouth show you guys did a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but...
The Kashmir gig, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was cool, man. I went down to that. I enjoyed that. It was a good night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was good fun. It was a good laugh and that. It's nice seeing people.
Look at Matt. Sorry, Matt. Nice. That's how he's. That guy.
Yeah, man. He may or may not have submitted some questions for you later on. I'll ask you them out. I'll ask you and say.
Please don't read his questions. No, shout
as much
to
as I'd love to.
Shout to Mad Nice though.
Exactly, man. Last time you were on the podcast, man, things were a little bit different. It was 2019. It was live and direct from the flat in Bournemouth. Logistically, yeah. A massive undertaking because it was like yourself, Pitch, Rye Shabby, and then Compound came through after. So it was just a. Oh, mate, logistically, it was it was a long night. But it's been a mad few years since then. How have things been kind of musically? I know, obviously, you've put out a couple of incredible projects, including your more recent instrumental tape. So how's it all been, man, creatively for you lately?
Pretty good, man. It's since that night where we did the last thing, it's been a whirlwind, dude. And it feels like nothing's happened. Not nothing's happened, but everything's just been pretty much the same. Like, in terms of my creative process, it never really changes. I'll go a few months without writing anything and think I'm going to quit. And then I'll just have a burst and write a load of stuff. I've been back on the beats, actually. So I'm going to plan to put more beat tapes up regularly. All is good. All is good. Less shows, obviously, but that's coming back. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, man, you're back on tour with like the Hours now, aren't you? And you caught like CD at a show like a few weeks ago, Canadian Dads. He made his day. How does that feel generally to kind of be back on the stage?
Yeah, it was nice. it's the first time we've done the full group together for a real long time. Because yeah, Flips wasn't at the ones we did last year, so it was nice to have all of us back together. It was fun, man. It all happened a bit too quick, you know. We had 2 weeks worth of shows, and then it was done. It's funny coming off tour. You just sort of sit there twiddling your thumbs for the first week afterwards, like, oh right, where's my rider? You know, when am I going on? What time sound check?
So Flip Tricks he wasn't present at the last show, like last year. Was that like a 3 hours gig, or was that something separate? Like, what happened there? Like,
he just couldn't make it to a couple that we had due to, you know, travel stuff. We did a couple that was just the three of us, but we brought Smellington Piff along. So he, you know, because he's on our albums and stuff, and he's done a lot of tunes with Leaf. So, we still rocked it. But, you know, when it's a 4 hours gig, obviously you want everyone there. It was nice. It was a nice tour.
100%, man. And with your kind of creative process when you're making beats versus kind of doing kind of a full-length album with you rapping on as well, is that something that you kind of take more time over, or is it kind of, is that something you want to do a lot more of?
One of the reasons I don't make as many beats is I get bored of the process after a while. I love it for a bit, and then it gets to a point where I'm like, I just don't want to sit here with this thing looping over and trying to chop stuff, you know. I love it, but I kind of got to take breaks in between doing it. Because also the other thing I realized the other night is that I keep, you know, you can keep raising the level of the volume on the MPC. And by the end of the night, I'm just blowing my ears out with these headphones, and I've got like my ears ringing for 2 days. And it's like, man, I just need to give myself a bit of a break from this. But yeah.
Yeah, man. I bet it's just a... when you kind of, I was working today when I was listening to Verbs Without Words, Volume 2, and it's just kind of nice. And this, you know, it's some nice kind of soulful cuts and break beats in there as well. What's your kind of process, kind of, without giving anything away, like digging-wise, is there anything you like doing, or anywhere you like going in particular to find stuff that you like, or is it just kind of...
I'll take samples from anywhere, really. I try and play some stuff, but I'm not, you know, I don't have all the equipment I'd like to have to be able to play what I want to play. But in terms of like the stuff on that project, I think a lot of it, when we were on tour, you know, you just get to pick up records from spots that you know, a bit more out the way that you wouldn't normally see. So a lot of those records I was lucky enough to find while I was traveling, and it's cheaper too, like that way, for the records. So yeah, I'd say that's probably a lot of stuff. But you know, if I find stuff online or whatever, but the thing about that is, if you can find it online, you can bet probably every producer has it already. So
yeah, that's true, man. That's true. I was gonna say as well, like, you dropped the third instalment of like Foggy Sky, so Stranded in Foggy Times. So at Kai Cooper asked earlier, shouts to you, which is your favourite out of the three in the trilogy, or is it kind of a natural progression? Because obviously there's thematically a lot of similarities. Do you have a favourite out of the three projects?
It's tough. I think I kind of look at them as one whole piece. I think when I listen back to the first one, there's stuff I'm like, oh, I love some of it, and some of it I might have done differently. Obviously, the latest one is closest to where I'm at now, so I kind of feel it a bit more for that reason. But like, if I look at it objectively, I think maybe Land of the Foggy Skies, like the middle one, might be the one I feel is my best piece of work, or me and Bill's best piece of work, I should say. Mm-hmm. But it's tough though. But yeah, I think objectively maybe Land of the Foggy Skies, yeah. Just because I don't want to fence it, you know what I mean? Otherwise I was...
Yeah. No, no, or you could go the other way and just say they're all fucking amazing. Do you know what I mean?
Like, or they're all shit.
Yeah, man, that's it. It's I suppose, you know, when you ask questions about your own work, it's all kind of only you really know where you were creatively when you were making it, in that kind of headspace, and some of the context behind some of the songs and all of that stuff, behind the whole writing process. So it's always going to be more personal to you, rather than just kind of a, you know, someone listening and interpreting what they want from it.
Right. Yeah, man.
Yeah. So you've recently, the ironic thing is, since last time, it took a while to get you down to Bournemouth, and now you're based in Bournemouth, and I'm in even bigger backwater now in Devon. So it's just like, do you know what I mean? It's just.
Well, yeah, I guess during the, I hate saying during lockdown, referring to things in that way, but yeah, just for the purpose of this, obviously. But I think that's where you started doing a lot of things online anyway, right? So, like, over Zoom and stuff like that. So, kind of, I think it's fine doing interviews this way. It's nice, you know, it's nice being in the same room, but it's also cool to be able to reach anyone anywhere at any time.
Yeah, 100%, man. I think that's, it helped kind of ticking things over as well. Linking up with people, people you wouldn't otherwise be able to, like in America, for example, having guests from over there, and just, you know, even kind of thinking more, like Canadian Dad, for example, like getting him involved with like the whole Shotgun the Bars thing lately, you know, as a guest judge. It's just stuff like that. It's just, I don't know, I think the world's getting much smaller, you know.
Yeah.
And you followed that as well, didn't you? The Shotgun the Bars contest. Any kind of...
Sorry, say that again.
I was going to say, was there any kind of standout moments for you?
You know what? I think the last one that you guys did, the whole competition was just really strong. I think people put a lot of effort into the videos, and like there was like the standard was really really high. But yeah, it was like Press One really killed that though. I think he was a deserved winner of it. But yeah, the standard throughout was really high, so I enjoyed the whole thing. You know, it was enjoyable all around.
Yeah, man. You know, respect for you know, getting involved, participating in the voting, and all of that as well. Because it was definitely like leveled up from the first time, just in terms of kind of, as you say, like people putting effort in. The first time round was just like, we didn't really know what we were doing. We kind of just saw what was going to stick on the wall. Do you know what I mean? And we were kind of making it up as we went along, and it kind of got a lot of traction. And so it really kind of, we were able to kind of streamline it this year. And we want to like do it a bit more, because making the most of like Instagram, I think, yeah, it just felt a little bit more kind of collaborative, you know what I mean? Like we were doing the podcast for a while before, and getting people over to kind of YouTube and Spotify is always a lot more challenging when you've got a platform here already and you can just do it all in one spot, you know? So, yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, some really interesting entries as well. And behind the scenes, you know, there was a load of us, like, you know, all the beat makers and myself, Rob, just kind of just deliberating. And it was, yeah, the first part, putting that top 16 through was really difficult, man.
Arguments. There's arguments. There's stress.
A lot, yeah.
Strategy, yeah. Stress. It was long. It was all right, though. It was good. It's still a fun process. Like you said, we streamlined it and stuff. So it's like an evolving process. Like, we'll just kind of, however it works, the time, you know, we'll just kind of take things and then adjust them and stuff like that. And, you know what I mean? The different types of battles that we might implicate within the process will help. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's good. And
Do you guys prefer watching people go at each other, or would you rather people just did a verse and then you vote for the best verse? Like, what do you two think about that?
So that's interesting you should say that, because we had a lot of like kind of back and forth about what we should do, because obviously last year the first one was very much battle orientated, and the qualifying 16, it was like quite elusive whether or not it was just, you know, split of 16 and a top 16 go through. And then when it got to the kind of knockout stage, it was just like, right, you can either battle your opponent or you can just kind of like come with your hardest bars and then the public will vote on it. Whereas this time we thought we'd be a bit more kind of direct with what they should do and also put a vote out to the followers as well, saying whether or not they wanted a straight up battle or like a concept match or something like that. So Rob, you were all about the battles, weren't you? You wanted blood the whole time.
Yeah, I think the first round should always be about like selling yourself and how good you can be. So that's like the bar round. Do you know what I mean? That's for me, that's that. And then if you're up against people, then it should be more on the clashing side, and you can always bring that kind of technical energy to the clash. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's where I sit with it. But on before the whole competition was like, oh, should we do themed rounds and stuff? And I was like, no, not doing it. It's just cheesy. I don't want to do it. Like, it's rubbish. I didn't like it. But then obviously when it happened, I got overruled anyway, because I was the only guy that didn't want it to happen. And then like when it did happen, the MCs came with the whole flip anyway. They just used the concept as the flip for the battle. So like the clash. So it was like, well, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Off in that
what,
direction.
Do you mean the 90s thing that you did?
Yeah. So it worked anyway,
think...
but...
Go on, man.
No, I was waiting to see. Say,
I didn't say nothing.
Oh, okay. My screen's glitching.
All too like...
Bit, so look
polite.
Like you're about to say something. I stopped. And... Like,
but yeah, they flipped it. But it's always like, you know, you need to carry that technical energy from the first round into the second round. All the whole, for me, as a you know, someone who listens to bars and stuff, you always have to have that technical thing. It's not always just set up punch. You have to have, you know, patterns and construction with all your the whole thing. So, but yeah, the topics are all right.
I think the thought process was just to kind of like evolve it from last year, do you know what I mean? Because, but I think it worked out well in the end. I think just like the 90s round did pay off because there were some sick bars in there. But I think, yeah, I still think it kind of all happened organically. But what do you think, Birdman? What would you rather see?
I kind of agree with Rob, really. I like the first round to have people just do their thing. And then I kind of like people, because if it's a competition where you're directly put against someone else, I kind of like that element of it. It really depends how far you take it. And both people, I think the important thing is both people to be on the same wavelength. Because if you've got one guy that thinks, oh, I'm just going to spit a verse, and then the other guy is like going at him and saying whatever, it's uneven. So it's hard to judge something like that.
Mm-hmm. That's where we fucked up last year, I think. I think the verse that comes to mind, the round that comes to mind, was Blurred First versus Lebs. Because, again, because it was kind of left open to interpretation, Blurred First was very much like, I'm going to just, you know, lay into this guy. Mm-hmm. And Lebs just came through and spat a 16, which was hard, but it just didn't make sense, do you know what I mean, in terms of how they worked together. So, yeah, we just kind of took all that on board, really, just to try to, like, make it a bit more. But, yeah, no, I agree, man.
What was your favourite clash? This goes to both of you. What was your favourite clash?
Oh, definitely. In this latest one, the final, 100%. Rain versus Press.
Rain
one.
Press.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think
that was my personal favourite. Like,
I think both kind of represented both sides of how... I mean, like, Rain came through with that real kind of DIY kind of aesthetic, do you know what I mean? Where, you know, it was just all raw, just spat live, and then Press with the production value. It just contrasted really well. But yeah, in terms of the content, had to be right. It was just like fucking crazy.
Yeah, it was
fucking
that
crazy.
Was a...
Shouts to Rain as well, man, because I think that could have gone either way. Like,
Sure. What was
Press's continuity?
Was it a Kashmir beat in the final? Was that the one that had the Kashmir beat too?
Yeah,
it was like a gritty. Yeah,
it's quite menacing and daunting. It's like, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, it was a really menacing beat for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it, man. I think like the whole continuation, the presser stuff was just like, you know, with the Leon theme and stuff. It was just very, very simple, but it did elevate it. But I think the bars and the content was like strong as well. So you can't just kind of lean on one, if that makes sense. It'd be unfair to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it really is all about the content, though. Ultimately, like, you could have the best video, but if you're shit, it doesn't matter. So I think people can see past that. But it is nice. It's a nice addition. It's a nice extra dimension to add, though, for sure. Mm-hmm. If you can do it,
100%, man.
So I like the other Cashmere beat.
What's that?
I like the other Cashmere beat.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, you know, you would say that.
Why? Why would I say
that? Oh, what did you have to pick from?
Huh? Yeah.
Did you have to pick from?
I prefer the Doughboy Sick Note battle. That was the side battle.
The one that wasn't really a battle between you and Lomax that you never shut up about. Everyone knows it's you, Rob. Come on, man.
It wasn't me. You can't prove
everyone
it.
Everyone knows it's you, mate.
Nah, I thought you were talking about. That was my favourite. Ferb, did you watch that one?
Which one was that?
It
the
wasn't
Sick
actually.
Note and Sick Note and Doughboy one. You see that one?
No, I don't think I did. When was that?
You did?
Move on.
I can't hold it back. Basically, right, I thought it'd be funny as a judge to mask up and do an entry as someone else. Just, oh, it ain't going to go anywhere. I did it anyway, innit? So I just did it. And then we said it in the group, and Lomax twigged, and he was like, oh, yeah. So he did it as well. And I'm like, you just stole my fucking idea. And because my ego was a bit hurt, and I was like, you're joking. So I went back at him with a verse in it and kind of clashed him on the thing. And then we made it a thing, and he did a video, and I did a video. We did like a collaborative song and made a video like to it. So it was all right. It was a good time. It was a laugh. But okay. Everybody was on low max.
You have to send me a link for that one.
Yeah, I'll send it for you. It was fun. It was all right. Obviously, I won, so I'm...
Yeah.
standard.
Did either of you guys see the Rolling Stones Top 200 hip hop albums list that came out like over the last couple of days?
I had to look for it. Yeah.
I
didn't get a chance to see the whole thing, man. But maybe
voted by committee.
For not listening to some of the albums. But do you know what I mean? Like, oh shit, I should listen to these or. I have to take time to listen to some of these people because you don't always take time to listen to people. I only got like...
I don't know, man. I mean, put it into context, like Illmatic was at number 24 and like... Chance the Rapper, Acid Rap, was a place higher than Cuban Links. I was just like, that's enough internet for today, man. It's just enough internet for me today. But anyway, yeah, no, I appreciate, I think because it's voted by committee and there's loads of different sources and critics and stuff. I'm sure they compile it all. So they have to include contemporary artists as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they should have done is just put 200 albums and just not put them in any order, just not ranked them in any order. Because a lot of the stuff there, like, they had Ready to Die at number one. Like, I'm not mad at that. It might not be my personal number. It would be in my top 10, for example. But I think when you go through the 200, a lot of the ones that were in there, I was like, yeah, that, you know, those are real classic albums. And then I think they were trying to cover basically like different parts of the country. So not just East Coast, West Coast. They wanted to make sure they had
South in there as well.
And also through the different years as well. So I think they wanted to like, I think there was a lot of covering bases basically. But I think ultimately... a lot of the list was good, but you can't start rankings in order because it's kind of weird. Like, yeah, like you say, like putting Cuban Links that far back, for example. I mean, to me, that's a top five album. Like,
100%. Yeah, easily, man.
But then everyone's got their own opinion, you know. So
it's relevance at the time as well. You can't really compare a Cuban Links to a contemporary album because it depends what it means to that generation of people at the time. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, for sure.
They had the. I saw this far down. Like I saw that they had the Wildstyle soundtrack on there, and that's obviously massively influential. But if you show it to a kiddie nowadays who's really into the hip hop, they'll go, "What the fuck is this?" Do you know what I mean? Or or someone of younger than us, not too old. You know what I mean, a bit younger. But if they hear the intro, you know, the train theme off there, and they go, "Oh, that's the thing off Illmatic." And you know what I mean? It won't be as impactful. So it just depends on the relevant at the time and what's relevant at the time. I don't think they should have ranked it. It should just be a collection of classic albums. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, I think they followed the same format as their like top, because they've done like a top 500 albums and songs, haven't they, anyway? And I think they like released like newer versions of the list. I think they did one a couple of years ago. But yeah, it's always hard to kind of... Maybe you could... possibly objectively ranked like a top 10 or 20, but 200 is just like a ridiculous amount to fathom. Do you know what I mean?
How many do you sit around a table?
Oh yeah, this is it. I think they probably go out to different publications and critics and artists and stuff. Like I wouldn't be surprised if they went out to like other, you know, to hip hop artists and stuff and peers, and they kind of probably just combined all of the votes together. But as Verb was saying, they need to cover a lot of bases with kind of contemporary stuff as well. I'm not one of these people who kind of gets mad at lists because it's very kind of arbitrary and stuff. And like we've done stuff like that on here as well, you know, like
it's so boring,
top rappers and stuff. And it's just like, yeah, it's like a good kind of think piece. But ultimately it is like, it's so you can't quantify art really, you know. But it's still fun to do, and it's good for engagement. You know what I mean? I think that's why a lot of people hop on it. But
oh yeah, because it gets talked about, doesn't it? Like everyone's mentioning it, so it just drives traffic.
Exactly. But I think like Joe Budden, like a few years ago, wasn't it? Remember that one? Do you remember like Joe Budden's list? And he was like, well, it wasn't Joe Budden's list, but he was like in the top 10 or something. It was like the top 50 rappers. And Joe Budden was like in the top 10, so people were speculating that it was Joe Budden's list. But it's just that, isn't it? And then that kind of like took the world by storm.
Wasn't it something to do with a list of Joe Budden and Method Man got into like a little, well, not a beef, but they went at each other a little bit.
I think so. I'm probably right.
You know, Joe Budden is better than Method Man in this. I don't know. But I think that's when it gets a bit, so you start to take it to heart, you know. I mean, top MC this time. Like, if someone, why am I not on there? I should be higher on there. It's like, that's when you're like, man, you just chill.
So was Meth taking umbrage then? Was he, like, annoyed at Joe Budden or, like, was
well,
it
no,
around?
You know what? Joe Budden looked at the list. I remember this video. There's a video of him looking at the list and he's like, talking about who he should have been above on the list. And then he's like, Method Man, I love Meth. But me and him, bar for bar. Da, 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 da. But basically, so, you know, it's whatever, like, some people wouldn't. Everyone would have their preference. But he got mad, basically, at being put below Method Man in this list and was ranting about not being higher up the list, but Man specifically. And, yeah, I can't even remember what happened. I think Method Man...
How did you get angry at that?
I
don't understand. I don't know how you get angry. It's just the respect level.
I love when Method Man was asked his top five rappers. That's probably like, he was just like, Inspector Deck, Inspector Deck, Inspector Deck.
Funny. Yeah. He's a lot of people.
He's got to be the most slept on geezer ever. Do you know what I mean? It's like, Deck has to be. Like, he's like the super sub that's in all the best tunes. Do you know what I mean? And he's like, he is, yeah, he's the, that
he kind of gets,
you know,
his respect on, doesn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, like, I know, but he's not your go-to. If you say Wu-Tang, he's not everyone's go-to necessarily. They'll say like Ray or Ghost, or they'll say like, I don't
that's
know,
true. People wouldn't want to spit after him though. That's what he was known for, isn't it? Like that first verse, just
like,
killing it.
He's nuts, like. For me, it was like, I really wanted that album. That, you know, that album that got lost in the flood that they talk about? Yeah.
Oh, man, yeah. You know what? You're right. That would have been... That would have been the one. That would, you know what? That I was talking about there, that's what would have put him on that. People would have thought of him the same as Raekwon and Ghost, because he would have had his Cuban links level. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're right on that, man. Definitely.
And I think that, yeah, I mean, losing it would have just taken the wind out of his sails. He probably still had all the rhymes in that, but the moment and the moments collected in recording and sessions and stuff like that that created it were lost, and you can't recreate energy like that. So I don't think if he tried to do it again, it would have worked. And they probably thought that as well themselves. So it kind of held him back a little bit. But again, he's still, you know, he has all the killer verses.
Yeah.
Think about it. So, but yeah, he's not slept on as such, but he's, you know,
yeah,
he's still that guy. So yeah, he is hard.
Going back to that list though, like, I think, like, I know just to kind of contradict myself to say that, like, it doesn't mean anything, but there's no gangstar in, like, the top 25.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's crazy. Do you have a favorite album that, like, if like a Desert Island disc?
Did they have an album in there? I can't remember.
But yeah, they would have had an album in there, yeah. Surely. Moment of Truth definitely on there, I swear.
But should it be on there? What's the best one in your opinion?
Yeah, I can't remember. But I mean, I don't know. It would just be my personal. I think Hard to Earn. I just think, you know, that was very definitive of that era, and kind of kickstarted a movement that I saw. But Element of Truth, you could argue, was produced in like more of a blockbuster type album, you know. And they evolved. Yeah, for me, it would be Hard to Earn. But then, you know, other people like slightly older than me would probably say Step in the Arena.
I think I'd agree on Hard to Earn, I think, to be fair. But going back to Tom's thing, though, would you say five Desert Island?
What? So I said, like, Desert Island disc. So, like, what would be your all-time favourite record?
I don't know, but all I'm seeing is Verbs has got that circle of death on his forehead. You see that?
Yeah, man. Rob, right, you go then.
Me?
And also, in the meantime, what are people saying?
Well, I'm
glad to engage with your audience, just saying, sorry, bro.
Are you going to cut me off like that, yeah? You motherfucker, you. Right, you talk to them. Let me find Verbs. But yeah, no, my top five or whatever it is, Verbs ain't on yet. But mine would be, I had this conversation with Fly Hooligan the other day. We was talking about between the Infamous, my Mobb Deep, and the fucking Hell on Earth, between the two. And it is really, really, it's a really tough like decision to make. If you had to pick one of them, it's really difficult to pick. Like, Infamous bangs all day, of course. And it, like, you know, if you heard any of the songs, you would definitely just keep banging them. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then, personally, for me, like, Hell on Earth's amazing as well. The production, it makes me feel like I'm walking in the rain. Like, it's fucking dirty and grimy. It's just, so it's between one of those two. I don't know which one. I don't know.
Big L. We're talking albums. We're not talking like careers.
Yeah, Big L. Lifestyles of the Poor and Dangerous, maybe. I've got to think something like Cuban Links or Iron Man. One of those two. I don't know. It'd be a difficult one. Probably Cuban Links. I love Iron Man though. Supreme Clientele.
Yeah.
that's a fucking.
So I love liquid thing, swords man. As well, man. Just depends on like what
swords.
You know,
but it's funny. Day, that's my car rotation. Like I go on like Spotify, I listen to shit all the time. Like whatever, I can grab shit because it's fucking Spotify, innit? But in my car, I have my CD in case I need to give it to someone. Mix CD in case I want to listen to my verse. No, I'm joking. In case I want to sell it. But I have all the Wu albums, like Liquid Swords, Cuban Links, Iron Man. I did have fucking ODB's one in there, but I took it out because his freestyle swearing is too much for my children. I don't mind the other ones, but his freestyle, he just fucking goes nuts on it, so I'm a bit like, but yeah, it's those Wu albums, really, off top. There must be some new ones, though, right? Like fucking Bandana or... what's the fucking album called? Pinata or something
Pinata,
like that.
Pinata, yeah, pretty good. Yeah. Mad Libs.
Or, I tell you what's mad slept on, yeah? And people never mention this group. They never mention it when they think of good albums that people make genuine good music and it's fucking People Under the Stairs. Yeah, yeah, People man. Under the Stairs, they never fucking mention them, right? They need their props. Like I said,
they do, man. They're underground, though, aren't they? Like San Francisco based, like
yeah.
They never kind of reached the levels of exposure that the likes of like Wu-Tang and some of those other artists you mentioned have. So I can understand why they're just probably not as. But in terms of respect and
Mad Nuts, you said Beat Nuts as well. Sorry, Beat Nuts. I listened to. What is it? The one with Fashion on it. That first album was Intoxicated Demons. Yeah, that was.
That's
another sick album as well. So it, yeah, but yeah. Vars, we're just going into the whole what albums did you have on the desert island type thing.
Oh yeah.
And then Rob proceeded just to list all the Wu solo albums, basically. Such a cliche.
Not a bad shot. I mean, yeah, I'd have to have like. Al Green, Al Green, someone I could just listen to all the time, like Still In Love With You by Al Green. I'd have
okay.
Yeah,
that was someone actually asked that. Like, what was your favorite non-hip hop track? So would that be it?
Yeah, that'd probably be number one. I like Jimi Hendrix, Electric Ladyland in terms of non-hip hop. I like Steve Lacy, you know, Steve Lacy's demos.
Yeah.
Dark Red and all that.
Dark Reds, yeah, yeah, it's chilled, that's right.
The Internet, like Hive Mind and Ego Death, like, I like those albums. The Doors.
Internet's like the Odd Future guys, yeah?
I think they were affiliated.
They were part of Odd Future. Like
Sid,
that's
like
it, yeah.
Lacy, Matt Martians, and yeah, from LA though. Yeah, I think they were like, affiliated with Odd Future. I can't remember.
They did a tune together. I'm sure they did a song together that was quite soulful, I think. I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
I think Tyler the Creator is on. Oh no, sorry. Steve Lacy was on Tyler the Creator's album. They've worked together, I'm pretty sure.
What album do you think? People would be surprised to hear that you like if you got, I hate the term guilty pleasure because it never is if you love something, right? But let's just for the sake of conversation call it that. Have you got like a guilty pleasure with an album?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm trying to think about that.
And you like country music or something, just completely.
I never really got into country music. I mean, anything I like, I don't mind saying I like. There's nothing I can think of that, I mean, maybe. Like it's not like what people would think of when you say guilty pleasure at all, but maybe as in not expecting me to like, you know, like The Doors or Radiohead. But maybe people wouldn't be surprised by that. So I have no idea, man. But there's nothing like snow, you know, like
I think,
Cheeky Girl that just bang Cheeky Girl music all the time. When
let's go back, man. We got to talk Radiohead, man, because it was like the 25-year anniversary of OK Computer a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Have you got a favorite Radiohead album? Because obviously that's a band that's just completely evolved in sound over the years.
I mean, you know what? It's funny. Like, I remember listening to OK Computer. Like, you know, I remember the video for like Paranoid and Android.
The animated one.
The dope videos, you know. And that's what got me into them, funny enough, just being younger and watching them on MTV and stuff. And but you know, the newer one, Shaped Pool, there was something about that album that inspired me to write a lot. So I know it probably wouldn't be a lot of people's favorite album of theirs, but it's kind of mine for that reason. Just because, yeah, that Daydreamers track, for example, I remember having that on loop on a train once and just writing like about three verses just in with that looping, no tempo in mind, just like, the vibe of it, I just found inspiring. So it's kind of magic in a way, their sound, their music, or that album for me personally.
Have you listened to any of the Smile bands, like Tom York's latest kind of stuff with, it's Johnny Greenwood and Tom York, but another drummer, I think. But the album they just released a few weeks ago, it's incredible, man. It's like really, really good stuff.
Was it called? I have to check that out.
So the band's called The Smile Band, or like The Smile, I think they're called. And it's just basically, it just sounds like Radiohead, basically, because it's like the best part of Radiohead and another drummer.
All right. Yeah, yeah. I'll have to.
But yeah. Good shit, man. It's good. And The Doors as well. That's a good shout, man. The Doors are like, it's weird because obviously.
You seen a documentary about that, about them at all? Did you see the documentary?
I don't think so, but I mean, like Jim Morrison,
he talks about what was interesting for me on that was that with the they didn't have a bassist or something; they just had an organ player. The geezer played the organ. That was their bass shit. That was mad interesting to me. That was
cool. The end as well, man. That's just the track. But is that the
popular power? I think it's things like that. What's that?
No, go on, man.
No, I'm just going to say, like, what he said about the organ playing the bass, I think that's things that made their sound quite, you know, is that type of thing. It really stands out, that those, like, little lines, you know, of organ that come in and out. So, but, yeah, I also it's like, I spent a lot of time in Los Angeles as a kid, so that, you know, that group just sounds like Los Angeles to me. You know, it's very much of that place.
Yeah, man, very kind of like psychedelic, proggy, just completely different.
I think there was a lot of bands out of a similar time that kind of emulated them a little bit, but maybe took it to a different kind of level. Do you know what I mean? Bands that I can't really call off the top of my head, but like progressive, like you said, like prog rock type of stuff, kind of going into like, you know, mad different psychedelic angles where the tune would be about 12 minutes long. I used to sample when I was trying make beats back in the day and stuff, like Bad Habits put me onto a load of like prog rock and stuff like that, and you can see like a lot of the influence through like the organs and the guitars. You could take a lot of drum like loops off it as well, because it was mad like decent drum breaks on it as well. But yeah, whatever, man.
Have you ever sampled any Doors, Vlad?
I have.
Yeah, I did. I did once, yeah. I probably didn't come out, though. But I remember when I first, because I didn't really grow up listening to them. I discovered them later. And so I heard them, there's definitely little bits I did sample, yeah. But I don't think I ever released anything that was sampled in the Doors. But Kanye sampled him, didn't he, for The Takeover by Jay-Z?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. His stuff goes deep, though, man. Are you a Kanye fan, generally?
Yeah, for sure. I am. I don't like all the music he's made, but I think he's made some incredible music, and a lot that I do go back and listen to. So, yeah, no, I would say I am, yeah, for that reason. I think he's important. A lot of the stuff he's done. I really liked the documentary as well.
I need to watch it. I just think it's like, as a creative person, he's just off his head. Like, it started off so kind of like normal, like archetypal hip hop. Do you know what I mean? And then it's just kind of exploded into something completely different with his clothing brand and his shoes and you know, you look at the designs in his shoes and his clothes, it's somewhere else. And you can even see it as a character and his thought process as a person, his productions when it comes to live shows and stuff like that. He is somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
I think you get kind of like privilege when you have lots of money, I think, but I think he's created those, you know, that freedom for himself, for his music. So you can't hate on all the things he's doing, all the attitude he has towards other people, because he's made a lane for himself. So yeah, like you said, you can't discount him. He's hugely important to the culture. So yeah.
I think that's it, though. I think people often, obviously this is just me talking about my perception of what I see online, but with an artist like Kendrick Lamar, not Kendrick Lamar, I'll talk about him in a minute, but with an artist like Kanye West, it's the kind of stuff outside of the music people kind of get infatuated with, and it kind of makes a bad impression of his music, if that makes sense. Like they're influenced by that kind of thing rather than taking the time to actually listen to what he's doing. And that's not to say that everything he does is incredible, but I think a lot of his music's, for me at least, and that's why I was going to go on to Kendrick Lamar, is it's slow burn. Like I'll go back to and appreciate more after a few years. So Kendrick, for example, his latest album, I've listened to once on the day it came out, and I know that I haven't listened to it since, and I probably won't go back to it for another 6 months or so. But damn, for the last one that came out before that, I didn't get it when it first came out, and now I absolutely love it. Do you know what I mean? The same happened with To Pimp a Butterfly. I think was a bit more accessible, or Good Kid, Mad City rather. That was the real kind of accessible one for me at least. And when I saw him live, To Pimp a Butterfly was the most kind of like cohesive piece of art that he's done, and for me it's like a near perfect album. But damn, yeah,
with To Pimp a Butterfly, that's one of those ones where, like, what I liked about it is it, when you listen start to finish, like it does take you on a journey. Like it really is, I think it's made to be listened to like that, because I couldn't really get down with it until one day is when I was traveling. I think that's my favorite time to listen to music, but I listened to it start to finish and I was like, yeah, actually that's actually pretty incredible piece of work right there. But it's not something I just play all the time.
No, and it's like his stuff isn't always the most accessible. There's always songs on there which is kind of which you could stick on and listen to at that kind of superficial level, but then when you actually strip it back down, there are layers to it. Do you know what I mean? Even the kind of more radio friendly ones that he's got on there, which I guess is just like a testament to his writing. But yeah, man, he's definitely one of those artists where you really need to kind of invest time into the listening experience. Otherwise it's just going to be like overwhelming. Do you know? I get overwhelmed by listening to it sometimes. I'm just like, I need to step back from this. It's too dense.
Yeah, I haven't actually properly checked the new one, to be fair. I gave it a quick...
Yeah. So it's about... It's the content is not your typical, and you can, like... You have to be quite mature for it, I think. A lot of things might fly over a lot of people's heads if they haven't had that life experience, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and if you're not ready to hear some of the things he's saying, like, he talks about his relative who's gay or something like that, or is transgender or something, and then he talks about him being touched or being abused because his mum was abused or something like that, and then him being accused of being abused because he lives with his cousin or whoever it is. Like, it's really, and do you know what I mean? You can't, as hip hop, you don't expect to hear those themes on a song, but because he's saying it, it's like it blows you away, and it's all part, again, it's all part of the whole production, the movie and the soundscape of the project that kind of draws you in and allows you to feel relaxed enough to hear it, you know what I mean, to listen to it. So, but yeah, it's a very good album. So,
well, yeah, I'm going to give it the proper time of day. Wait till I've got a long train journey or something.
Yeah, it's definitely one.
Yeah, man, definitely.
It's a movie. They're all movies, really. Apart from, for me personally, like, I need to check down more, but they're like, To Pimp a Butterfly was a complete movie to me. Do you know what I mean?
And 100%. I agree.
Like, I used to walk from my work, from my flat, sorry, to my where I used to work, and it'd take me 15 minutes. And I'd try to get 15 minutes in of, like, each of the album, and it was almost just watching like a film in parts, and I'd make sure on the walk home I'd walk really, really slow so I could hear as much of it as possible. Do you know what I mean?
But
I'd get that. That would be my listening time, that walk home. If I didn't get, if it was raining or whatever, do you know what I mean? I'd listen to, make sure I listened to it. It's, you get drawn in. It's like when you're watching a good film. It's like, you get drawn in.
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison to make, because I think, you know, as someone that makes albums, I want people to listen start to finish and hear like the whole picture. Yeah, and it is like when people only pick on certain songs. Obviously, it's fine. I get it. Music is different, but it kind of feels like you would if you just watch a couple scenes and not watch the whole movie. It's like I need you to get the context of what's going on, because I think maybe not everyone, but I think most people do make albums like that where it has like a, you know, they really think about the track list and how it's going to all fit together. And, you know, I was watching an interview with Alchemist about when he makes albums and he's trying to find those little, you know, in between bits for tracks to make it flow and keep people hooked in to the whole project. It'd be nice, you know, if it came back to people, you know, like when you had to have a CD, only just one CD, and you just had to play it start to finish because you didn't have anything else to flick through. It'd be nice, you know, albums.
When it comes to to making albums yourself, how much like quality control goes into it?
In what sense? How do you mean?
So, like, say, so you put like an album out. It's like 15 tracks. That's the album that we get. Yeah, but how many tracks would you leave off? Like, so do you know what I mean? Like, if you're writing to like a subject matter, you've got a concept in your head, what, you know, do you take tracks out, or do you kind of get the whole selection of tracks that you had in mind and just keep them anyway? Like, what do you,
I definitely, there'll definitely be tracks that get left off. And sometimes tracks I like, but they just don't, I can't find a place to put them in the final track list. And then another thing I'll do is like I'll do a lot of different versions of a song, so like I'll try it over different beats, or you know, I'll change the hook or switch some of the verses around. So yeah, there's a lot of, definitely, like I think the shortest amount of time it would take me to make an album is 2 years. So if I've had like an album out a year for a spell, that means I was writing albums consecutively, basically. Because I kind of feel like it's not just the thinking of the ideas and making the tracks, but you also have to sit with it. I feel like if I just made something and put it straight out, the next week I'll be like, oh, fuck, that was so terrible. Why did I put that out? But I need to like sit with songs just to make sure, like, it's, you know, because I feel like if I can listen to it straight for a couple months on repeat, then, you know, it's good enough. But once I've released it, I'll very rarely go back to an album, because I kind of feel like once it's out there, I can't change it. So it's everyone else's at that stage. But but in the process, I'll listen to it on repeat forever. I'll just have it nonstop in my ears, because I'm just going over every last detail, just making sure, is this really like what I want to say? Is it really good enough? And even then, sometimes I listen back to old albums and be like, what the fuck was I on then? Like, but, you know, I always say to people, it's like old photos, you know, why was I wearing that? Like, you know, I can't believe I'm looking at that back then.
So it's just a moment, isn't it? You're capturing a vibe. That's what, just blame the guy in the picture, not you.
So, like, do you have a favorite in your catalog? I know you mentioned your favorite out of the like the Skies trilogy, but is that your favorite kind of like just in general, or
it could be. I mean, I think there's that. I mean, Morning Process did a lot for me as an artist. It's not necessarily my personal favorite of my work, but that's an important one. So
some bangers on there, man. I fucking love that album.
Yeah, you know, with that one, like that's a case where I look back and I was like, I wish I'd just changed a couple bits. But that said, I'm glad I didn't, because I probably would have changed things. Like maybe even like Where You Find Me, which went on to be one of my favorite tracks, I might have not put that out had I overthought it. I might have been, oh, is this too silly? because when I made it, I was like, oh, this is just too silly. Are people going to take the piss out of me? But I was like, no, it's from the heart. It's what I was.
It's so relatable, just, though. It's like it's the most relatable rap track ever, man.
But you never know what's going to be, what's going to connect with people, you know. Well, I mean, you get to know a bit more, but you can never 100% say, oh, yeah, I know this is going to bang. This is going to be the one. Because I never would have thought that about a lot of my most popular tracks. So, but if you're talking personal favourites, like, maybe like Land of the Foggy Skies, Good Evening, like those projects. Just in terms of like when I listen back to them, like, yeah, I'm quite proud of like how that was made and how it came out. But yeah, I don't know, man. Morning Process and also the album I did with Harry Love back in the day, those are also important to me as well. But I feel like on those, I wasn't quite where I wanted to be as an artist. So it's more from a personal point of view. But in terms of like the impact and how they've been received, Morning Process and Bring It Back to Basics, I've got to mention those.
So that's a bit of a segue to some questions we've got from some of the followers on Instagram. Yeah. And so at Joe Puddle asks, is there a chance of a Backhand Slap Talk technical illness repress?
Probably not.
Wishful thinking. Next question.
Yeah, that's literally it.
So the first question he actually asked, and that was just kind of obviously going into your albums and your old stuff back in the day. But how do you feel that UK hip hop has changed since the Low Life days? Do you think that it's
I mean, it's definitely changed, but I feel like I don't feel that different about it. I mean, it's more just in the way the music's consumed. I think it's changed. You know, it's not so much UK hip, it's just music in general. The industry has just gone through changes. So,
Do you want to elaborate a bit, or is it kind of because I think we physical... go on? Like physical media, I guess, like resurgence of people are collecting vinyl, and especially through labels like High Focus and Blah in UK hip hop. There's still a demand for it.
I think it's the independent labels that helped regenerate that that boom in vinyl sales, you know. And I mean, like a lot of independent labels in general. All over the world, because I think it's those sort of those labels have this sort of hardcore fan base that just want to really support and buy everything. And I kind of feel like if someone is strictly, you know, into what they hear on the radio, they might not be as passionate as to go and follow the artist specifically. Whereas when you really follow something, you dig to find it because it's not everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I guess as soon as any big company sees a medium doing well, they'll, oh, hold on, we can do that too. And so it all is a big snowball effect, to the point where I was reading something where they said that Adele, her album being pressed as many copies as it was the reason for all the delays at the vinyl factories. So that's an interesting side note.
I don't know if that's actually true. Yeah. But
I don't know if people were literally saying, oh, yeah, we're not going to press your record because we're doing, like, fucking 100,000 Adele records. But they were saying that. That was something that was being said. And there are shitloads of vinyl delays.
Yeah, I do hear that. But I don't know. Yeah, surely it can't. She can't be the sole reason for that. I don't know. But
I mean, shit. Like, they say they pressed 500,000 of those. You're telling me, like, 500,000 damn. Records being pressed will shut down the whole business, yeah. I doubt, but it's interesting that they laid claim to that.
Oh, mate, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Just like just how popular vinyl is now as well. Like, would you say that aside from what you dig for sampling and for producing, do you collect vinyl to listen to as well? Is that like your thing, or are you not really?
I used to, but I don't have space for that anymore. Like, My favorite albums, I would like to own them all on vinyl. So, but outside of that, I'm not too bothered. I'm not too bothered. I mean, technically, you know, it is the best quality to listen to music. So I'll always keep the record player and stuff and some vinyl. But I just don't want to have crates and crates and crates. Like,
yeah. And I guess going back to what we were saying before, like how people digest music, it is the best way of listening to an album start to finish. Because, like,
yeah,
it's just too much of a fucking pain just to, like, keep skipping. You know, if you're just kind of listening casually, yeah, it's too much of a pain to keep skipping tracks and all of that kind of thing. So if you're going to, like, invest money in buying a record, you really want to like that record, unless you're kind of digging for different reasons or, you know, bargains and stuff. Mm. But, yeah, man, it's interesting. Because my attention span shot to bits, like, especially over the last couple of years, when it comes to, like, watching films and, like, listening to music, and I've had to kind of retrain myself. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. I mean, it's a sign of the times, isn't it? Like,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I know, I'm the same way. I don't know. I was trying to think, like, a film's not as good anymore. Is that why? Because I used to be such a movie nerd, and then I just don't watch him in the same way I used to. But I don't know if that's because I'm more busy and have kids and, like, less time to sit and watch films, or if it's like, yeah, I just don't enjoy films in the same way. But then when I think back to all the classics I used to watch, I don't know if I'm just that guy that just loves his era of film and just hates on everything else. I can't work it out.
So I'm going to try and watch
good films so I can make that call and see.
That's the thing. There's, like, a wealth of good shit out there, like, over all the decades. And I think people's mindset is that it's, like, you only have to go, you have to, like, watch the new stuff. Like, oh, what are we going to watch this weekend? Oh, what's out? What's new? It's like, no, there's, like, think how many films there are in existence, right? You just need to be a little ushering in the right direction. There's all kinds of good stuff out there, man. But, it is weird. I've been trying to do, like, little retrospectives of, like, my favourite directors. So, like, Scorsese, for example, I was watching, like, filling in some of the gaps of Scorsese movies that I'd never seen. Like, I'd never seen Bringing Out the Dead, you know, Nick Cage before.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
That's actually good. Oh, it's in it. I want to see it.
Ving Rhames, man, was fucking amazing in that movie. It was absolutely killed it. And After Hours and all of those ones, you know. And then, obviously, like, Ray Liotta, R.I.P., kind of, the timing was kind of bittersweet for that. That's kind of the way that I kind of digest stuff now. I have to physically, like, have a reason to do it, or, like, make a list, or, like, it's weird, man. I can't explain it, but otherwise I'm just kind of, like, aimlessly scrolling. But after this, I'll delete Instagram for, like, a few days, do you know what I mean, off my phone. Well, I'll still have it, but I'll delete the app off my phone. I'll just not go on it.
I can't watch things anymore. It's fucked. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe I've got ADHD. I don't know. Like, if I'm watching something, I have to be doing something with my hands. So it's really weird. Like that's why I got so good at drawing when I was a kid, because I'd watch TV and draw at the same time. And now it's the phone. And thing is, phones are mad antisocial. So now I can do a Rubik's Cube. I can do a Rubik's Cube.
That's pretty good.
Not bad. I can do it. I'm like that now, just watching the telly. Mrs. gets well fucked off of me.
It's like... just a little click, click, click. Yeah. You could do a take up knitting or something. You
know? Knitting, knitting.
Make what a nice jumper while you watch a movie.
I don't want to take up smoking again.
You should knit like an album cover or something, like a real hipster.
I'll knit myself a beard because I
can't. Niche market.
What I mean. But yeah. Fuck it, it's a bit weird, isn't it?
I gave up trying to grow a beard a long time ago, man. Anyway, back to the hip hop stuff, man, because we always kind of do this. so asked about, and we spoke about kind of when Mad Nights was on the podcast. We talked about, like, the Primo joint that you guys did, the Owls did, and had a kind of, like, a few anecdotes on that. But who else is on your bucket list of either producers or rappers to work with?
I don't know, like, it's funny because it's quite different now, where, like, I was more eager to, it was more of a dream when I was young, I'd love to work with this person or that person. And I think now it's kind of like, Primo was always the main producer. And so, I don't know, now I'm just, I don't really, Like, I could tell you who my favorite producers are. Like, basically anything that Madlib does or Alchemist does, I'll always check. Like, that's just the instant. I'll listen to the whole thing as soon as it comes out. There's other dope producers, obviously. Those are the main two, because they are just because the number of years they put in, as well as how good they still are now.
Sorry to interject, but have you heard the new Black Star album that Madlib?
I have.
You have? Because it was all through that podcast app, wasn't it?
Say that again, sorry?
Because didn't Talib release it through like his podcast app or something? It was real hard to get to.
Yeah, I heard it somewhere. I can't remember.
You had to make the baby Jesus cry. Come on.
It's good. It's one of the, I listened to it all the way through. It was on a train journey, and I listened to it all the way through, and I haven't gone back to it. So I guess that would say it didn't blow me away, but it's solid. Like, I don't have anything bad to say about it. I liked it. I listened the whole way through and enjoyed it. But I haven't gone back to it a ton of times afterwards.
Different vibe entirely, like Madlib to High Tech as well. Do you know what I mean? Like it's just, and I guess the time the original came out, it was very much like not of its time, because it is a timeless album in my opinion. I love Black Star, but I can imagine. I haven't heard the whole thing. I've heard like a couple of tracks, but I can imagine it's a completely different sounding record with Madlib on it, and how they've both kind of changed as artists, especially Yasin Bey, like Mos Def as well. He's like just a completely different artist.
I really like his vocals on it. He still sounds really good. It's funny you mentioned High Tech though, because recently I've been going back to his producer albums, like especially the first one. And then also the Mood album, you know, that group Mood, and they did an album called Doom.
And
produced by High Tech as well. And his beats were crazy. Like, High Tech was so good, is so good, but I haven't heard recent stuff from him. But yeah, I've been going back to his albums a lot that he's produced.
Anyway, sorry, man, I cut you off when you were talking about your favourite producers. You got to Madlib.
Yeah, and Alchemist as well. I really like the stuff Alchemist and Bodie James have done together.
Yeah,
Price of Tea in China.
Yeah, that
all,
was that
all
was
of great. That.
And was it Bo Jackson and
Bo.
Yeah.
Do you think do you think when you say come back to the old working with people, do you think it's like obviously you work with Primo and stuff like that, but do you think that sometimes it can be a bit forced when you're working with people, like just like another tick off the list, like, and it's better to kind of create music organically. Do you know what I mean? Because
I think that's when the best music is made, when you're in a room with someone doing it. And I think the thing that was cool about when we did Think Twice was that we didn't sit in a room and do it with Premiere, but we did. There was a lot of back and forth and a lot of, because the first beat we got, you know, we didn't really, it was good, but it wasn't the right one for us, basically. So we kind of had to go back and...
How do you go back to Premiere and say, nah?
Well, see...
I've heard this story before, yeah.
Well, this is what's cool about Premiere is that it was Leaf that had the main contact with him, because that's, you know, Leaf's the one that got the link in the first place. But, you know, they spoke on the phone, there was a lot of back and forth over email, and he always said, you know, I need you guys to be happy with the joint, so just let me know what you think of it and stuff. So when it's not like we went back and said, oh, it's terrible, because that's not what we thought. It's not that we didn't like it, it's just that it didn't hit. Like, for example, like when I was playing it, I couldn't really think, like, I don't know exactly what I'm going to write to this. Whereas when Think Twice came through, I got my first bars as soon as I pressed play on the beat.
Yeah.
I'm going to come in. So I knew that was the one. So, you know, that's why it was cool. Because I think with guest verses, for example, like when people hit someone up, they don't know for a verse. You don't know what you're going to get sent back. You could get lucky and it could be amazing. Or it could just be, you know, someone freestyling in the studio and just sending you whatever. So with Premiere, like, we weren't in the room making the song physically together, but it was communication for months throughout the whole process. So I agree. I think, like, that's why, you know, now I feel like, obviously, there's people that I really like, but there's no one I would say, oh, I want to work with that person. I kind of feel like it just circumstance, you know, where if I wind up in a studio with whatever person or, you know, then cool. But I think I'm at a point where I'm not really going to chase getting a feature from anyone.
No. You're kind of in your own, like, you've made your way and you're kind of in your own little music bubble. Do you know, you're there now, so you don't really need to prove anything. You just want to, you make your music for yourself and people like it. So you don't have to chase validation by working with lots of different people. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, that's it, isn't it? Yeah. What you were talking about with...
I mean, yeah, it does. I think you're right. When you say, like, I do feel like I'm in the creative bubble. But whenever I make music now, it is kind of like a little screen comes down and it feels like a created world. And I am kind of making it for myself now because I feel like if I can't enjoy making music at this point, I'm going to stop. I don't want to do it if I'm not enjoying it. So the only reason I still do it is because it's a part of me that's very important to me and that I enjoy. Mm. And it's become more personal because of that, even though I have more people listening to me that, than I used to. So yeah, that is definitely true.
Mm. How's it all going with the label in the balance?
It took a little pause. I'm trying to get back to finishing off the More One project. Chillman's finishing an album. You know, so it's a tough thing. I found it quite hard, basically, to play that role in terms of running the label. But there's stuff in the process that's being finished off. So yeah, I'm not sure when these things will come out, but it's slowly rolling back to that.
Mm. And anything new coming out on HF as well? Obviously, you mentioned you kind of alluded to your instrumentals. You've obviously got Volume 2 that's just come out, Verbs Without Words. But what's next for on High Focus?
What, from me or on the label in general?
No, from you.
I am working on a project for High Focus. I'm not fully down the line with it, so.
Yeah, read between the lines, man.
Well, I think I'll have a project ready for next year. I've nearly finished writing something, but I'm in that stage where I need to sit with it for a while before I, you know what I mean, before I decide, right, this is coming out like this. Like, I need to find the name and the overall theme and work on it some more.
Yeah.
But I've got a project I'm working on, basically, hopefully for next year.
Can you tell us who's producing it?
Not yet, sorry. Well, only because I'm not 100% sure. There's always a few lanes. Like I say, I'm always working on a few things at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'll be further down the line with that soon. And I'm not purposely trying to be mysterious. I just,
I'm a bit superstitious
as well. I don't like to say things that don't happen too.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. Like, yeah. But I am working on a project for High Focus for next year, yeah.
Mm.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
I like to hear you off the Kashmir beats.
Yeah, well, we're definitely working together, 100%. Like, yeah. You'll hear me on Kashmir beats. That's one thing I'll say for sure. We linked up in the studio maybe a couple of weeks ago. Oh, I can't remember. No, we did a song together not long ago. So, yeah, we're, you know, it's funny, like, we've got so many tracks we've made over the years that never came out as well, that are lost too. Like, we started working on joint albums so many times, and circumstance is a funny thing, but you know, that's one of my best friends anyway, so yeah, we'll definitely be doing more music together.
Okay.
He's a ridiculous producer as well, Cash, man. Yeah. I mean, I'm a champion for this album, but you know what, that old Children album, French and Hyperbolic, it's ridiculous.
All three of those guys are crazy talented.
Agreed.
Yeah, and also, have you heard the Chuck Enzo album?
Yeah.
That's another one. Obviously produced by Cash with a lot of special guests on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything he's doing, like, he's just in a real cool creative space, I think, right now. Like, in terms of bars, beats, like, collaborations he's doing. Like, yeah, it's all fire.
Yeah, man. So, like, I've got a question for you. Who is the most slept-on artist that you know? Like, someone that you think more people need to know about, just in general. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to just be one. Like, you got a few in mind.
I don't know. You know, one person that comes to mind, you know Rox Fo?
No,
called Rox Fo, there you go.
How are we spelling that today?
It's R-O-C-K-S-F-O-E, Rox Fo. But the only reason I say that, because I heard him, like, a few years back, someone put me onto his music. And I was like, man, this guy is going to blow up. So he's not necessarily my most listened to artist, but he's just someone I think is incredibly talented. And I just thought, yeah, you'll see him everywhere in a couple of years. And people know about him, don't get me wrong. Like, he's, you know, he's got his fan base, but yeah, that's someone I thought. Also, this sounds like a funny answer because I'm in a group with the guy. He's not slept on totally, but I think BVA doesn't get the credit he deserves sometimes. I think BVA is ridiculously sick as an MC, and I don't think he always gets his... Well, he does. Like, don't get me wrong. People know, but people don't put him in the conversation of, like, best MC out there.
I'm going to be... I'm one of those people that kind of sleeps on him. I was listening to a song the other day that I'm actually on with him as, like, a crew track that I got sent by someone. This is going to be out in a while, but I listened to him. I'll talk about it off camera. But I listened to his verse, and I realised, I heard his delivery and the way he delivers and the impact of his voice, like, and how strong it is. And that in itself is great. He does say some good things, but the way he sounds on a track. And I heard another track... again, I had, like, a UK playlist going as well. I did a track with, I think, Jack Jetson, I think it was. And again, it's that the delivery level, like, he smashes it. So I think I have been one of those people that have slept on him. And, like, but going back to it, yeah, he is a lot better than I give him, or have given him credit for. So shout out to him. Yeah. And apparently he's a really nice guy as well. So.
Oh, no, yeah, he's a lovely dude, man. But, I hear, you know, like, it's because we've all got a preference for what we want to hear.
Of course,
like,
of course.
Hearing MC spitting. But I think what you said is definitely, I hear you on that. I think that is one of his main strengths as an MC, is just the relentless delivery and making every word hit. But yeah, I don't know. There's new stuff I've heard of his. I just think he's getting better and better all the time. And also, like, when you see him live on stage, that delivery is just pretty flawless, man. So,
wicked.
Yeah.
So that brings us on to my next question. Who's the best of the four owls? No, I'm joking, mate.
BVA. BVA's the best.
Shag, marry, avoid. But yeah, man, that's it. And you mentioned another rapper, Rob, and you were just explaining it, Jack Jetson, man. I mean, he's another one. He's just, like, ridiculous with it.
Yeah, he's crazy. I remember one time, it was just when Leaf had just finished producing his first album, Jack's first album, Adventures of Johnny Strange, and we played it in the car when we were on tour, and it just made me, like, feel threatened. I was like, fuck, that's good. But I ended up, like, I went on a whole, like, it's funny, like, when that happens, at first, I'll be like, I'm basically no good. I'm just null and void now. I'm going to have to retire soon. Like, and that'll be with any MC that I hear that really is like, fuck, this person's good. But then that will last for a couple of days. Then after that, I'll be like, just get back to the pen and pad and start writing a whole lot more.
That's interesting, actually, man. I was going to ask you that. Like, how does that kind of affect you as an artist? I know, like, friendly competition, obviously, it is a competitive sport. And as, like, I'm a consumer, I'm a listener, I'm a fan, I'm not, like, an artist in any way. But when you mentioned you heard him and you were, like, threatened by him, is that kind of
does that kind of affect you in a negative way, or is that something that drives you in a positive way?
I mean, I say threatened, it's more just like, I need to up my game. Mm-hmm. Like, there's people out here that are doing shit, I'm like, oh, fuck. So, but I love it though, because it's inspiration though. It's like, it's the artist part of me, the ego is going to feel slightly like not good enough, but ultimately, really, all it is that I'm just enjoying how good someone is at spitting, and that inspires me to go and want to write, basically. Like,
and it kind of leads into my next question. Do you think there's enough of that in like the UK scene, just kind of like giving props where it's due? So like, you know, shining a light on like, this guy is fucking sick, I don't care about my ego, I'm gonna like tell everyone how good this guy is. Do you think there's enough of that in the scene?
I think there's a good amount of that. I don't know about that really. I'm not sure. I think generally people do get their respect. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe there is an element of people kind of, if they like something, or the, you
pretend
know,
it what, doesn't exist kind of thing, just like now.
Well, yeah, exactly. That does. I think maybe that happens a bit. I think more so what I see is that people feel threatened if something becomes successful. They're like, oh, what, that shit, you know, because they don't like it and it's become successful. They're like, oh, that's just successful because ... whatever the reason may be. So there's a bit of that maybe that I've seen. But I don't know. I feel more and more I'm just in my own bubble now. So
yeah, and that's it as well. Like I think with that, there's almost kind of two ways of looking at it, with like creating a scene and like collaborating and even features. But ultimately, like, what other genre does that? You don't see kind of like metal bands all like featuring on each other's tracks and like propping each other up. Do you know what I mean? It's just kind of you just want to make the best art you can and do whatever it takes to do so. So if that means just kind of becoming a hermit for like 3 years, then do you know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one, man. Do you know what I'm trying to say? I'm probably poorly articulating my point here, but why would you necessarily have to do that?
I think there's a sense of community within hip hop that everyone brings each other together and likes to show that there is a community. And when it comes to metal and stuff like that, maybe there isn't. There is the community, because there's, you know, a big community around certain genres of music. But I don't know, maybe they dig each other a bit more and they show their appreciation for them, not just by making music together, but actually kind of buying the music and going to the gigs, as opposed to going to the track with each other. Do you know what I mean? Maybe they show it a different way. I don't know. Made up.
I think that's true. I think every genre will have its community. I think the thing with hip hop is that, you know, there's a lot of it starts from cyphers and people rapping together with their friends. So I think that just carries into the music, where, you know, what people call the posse cut, for example, you know, that will exist on most albums, or at least, you know, a high percentage of albums. So, yeah, I mean, I just think it's the nature of hip hop, you know, as an MC. You collaborate, you write, you know, you go back to back with other people on live sets, stuff like that. I just think it's more part of the genre.
You couldn't really say that in the metal band, because people just randomly jumping on stage.
Yeah, and... yeah, I can jump up and get a hot 16 with my guitar. <in the set.
laughs> Five lead guitar solos, like all just like fucking having
kicking off for like 20 minutes.
Having a solo off.
It's too much. Saying that, like, DJs don't do it really. Like, it's maybe it's not an instrumental thing. Do you know what I mean? It's the singers do it. You know, singers collaborate, I suppose. You know, you get duets and vocalists and stuff. They do stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, true. So, and actually, like, I guess you do get you get certain musicians that will play on a lot of different albums, I guess.
But they keep it. It's like subversive. Maybe they don't kind of. Are they credited all the time openly?
Well, yeah, I don't know, actually. Yeah, well, they wouldn't be credited as a featured artist.
Yeah.
Most times, that's true. You'd have to read the credits to see it. Maybe so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because even hearing, like DJs on the same track is weird, because they're doing the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember, like, it's an old song, ages ago. I can't remember the name of it, but they have, like, all the turntable, the DJ's cutting, but they have to introduce each DJ after they're doing their cutting section, because you don't know, otherwise you're not going to know who the DJs are. Do you know what I mean? So they're all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever, that was a little waffle. But yeah, well, what's your next question, Tom? You got a list?
So, I do have another question. So, at Keeks, I think that, at Keeks asks, what was the reason, if any, behind writing your song Medicaid?
Because I was on medication.
Makes sense.
That is actually true, but I mean, people will know, because I've talked about it before, that I have Crohn's disease, and that when I wrote that album, I was having like quite bad side effects from the medication I was on. So it's a bit of a not weird, but it's like when I listen back to it, I can't quite place that mind state, because it was I was just me sort of journaling, I guess, my experience of what I was going through, like being sick and being having side effects from medication. That was what that whole project that's where it came from, basically.
How did you feel about doing that, talking about it?
You know what? I didn't think about it, bro. I just didn't think about it. I needed to get it off my chest, and that was my way of doing it. And at the time, I liked how it sounded, and I felt like it was... I go back to it now, there's certain... Because I produced that whole project as well. I don't think I could have done that over someone else's beats. So when I listen back, I'm kind of glad that I put it out, because it charts that part of my career, basically. Or my life, actually, I should say, it charts that part of my life. And so, yeah, maybe if I'd have thought about it more, I might have been like, actually, I don't want to put this out there. But then, as I say, I'm glad I did, because it was just something that it came from somewhere, it needed to be expressed. And so, yeah, that's what I did. And I think like certain people connected with it, and you know, that's a big part of this thing, is connection, you know, music. It's about connection. So
100%, man.
But being, how are you? As I said it before on the other podcast, like, it's about, yeah, if you you can find a lot of nonsense through your music, but the most successful people are usually unapologetically themselves. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, whether it's someone who's mad eccentric, or whether it's someone who lives a lavish lifestyle, or someone who has health complications, like, you know, if you're yourself and you're honest about it, people don't appreciate not the narrative, but they appreciate the honesty, and that's where the connection comes out.
I agree, and it's the only thing that can make you truly original, is if you are just yourself, you know, because no one else can be you, you know. There might be people that are similar. But, like, you know, as an artist, when you express your voice, and that's, you know, that's what's always going to connect, because it's always going to be the most genuine type of art. And not to say you have to literally talk about, this is what's going on in my life, but you know, like someone like MF, if you say MF Doom, you just know that is, you know, he's creative. Like, rest in peace to the great Doom as well. But, you know, his creativity was kind of unrivaled. But he's not literally talking about his life, but you know that's him.
Stream of consciousness, right? Like, always, yeah. Isn't it? One of my favorite YouTube videos is Mos Def telling you like how much he loves MF Doom.
You know what I mean?
It's amazing. He's just rapping along, you know, like rap snitch knishes from Food. And he's just reciting the lyrics to that, and Beef Rap as well. And it's and most deaths just kind of reciting the bars and just going like, who thinks like this? This is just like insane, like how he thinks, and he's just, he's just gushing over his genius basically. But it's a really entertaining video.
I find myself like if I'm playing in the car, I'll get out of the car and I'll say like little ridiculous bars that he would say, just little silly things in it. And I think to myself, can I put that in a rhyme? Or I wish I could say that. I can't say that. Do you know what I mean? Like, only he could say that. That's what made him so unique, innit?
Yeah, definitely.
Have you got a favourite Doom album or like project?
You know what? I love Mad Villainy. I really do. I mean, I can't really ignore that. But I like Food. I like Born Like This. I didn't really get into Doom until Mad Villainy. Not that I didn't. I had a couple of 12s from the Operation Doomsday project. I saw that in person. I love how you have that on hand.
Yeah, he's got it there.
It's like conveyor belt with random objects.
To be on holiday. Got like, in the desert. Like, check this out.
Toy.
Man, that's
your lunchbox. Yeah, it is my lunchbox. Keep sandwiches in it.
But, yeah, so I say those, but when I go back now, I appreciate Operation Doomsday a lot more.
How'd you feel about that?
I liked it. I really did like it. And I'm also, on that note, I'm interested to see what this Black Thought and...
Black Thought, man.
I like the two singles. Like the one come out today, I think the second single from the project.
Wait, what the fuck have I missed? What's going on?
So I pre-ordered the vinyl, which means
Black Thought are doing an album.
Mm-hmm. You know this, man. I did tell you about this.
Yeah, but I forget how to spell my last name, so I don't know. I forget.
To be fair, that's fair. But I pre-ordered the vinyl, but I'm hoping that Adele's backlog isn't gonna delay that until 2024 or something. Do you know what I mean?
I think there are still factory delays.
But Black Thought is ridiculous, though. Like, I mean, I know it's kind of fashionable the last couple of years, but to say, oh yeah, Black Thought is the GOAT and stuff. But I've been a massive Roots fan for like forever. Do you know what I mean? And to see like people not finally, because obviously I'd say he's rated within like the community, he's held like the highest esteem as he can be as an MC with people who know, but I'm glad that they're getting more kind of mainstream exposure with like Jimmy Fallon and stuff, only to kind of give him that platform that otherwise he may have not had. But yeah, the guy is an instrument, you know, he's ridiculous.
An instrument,
he is, man.
It does sound he's crazy good.
Yeah,
he is.
Sorry for the interruption. That's a gush over him, but
you love him.
But yeah, so are you excited for that then, Verb?
I'm looking forward to listening to it. Because we were saying Danger Doom, and I don't know how I feel about the album. I could listen to Doom rap, especially by that point. I just wanted to hear him rap all the time. But I don't know if that's my favorite.
I didn't like it when it first came out. I didn't like it. I liked all the other stuff when they first came out initially.
You're wrong. You're so wrong.
I got back into it. Really, my kids got me back into Doom. Madly enough, I put Danger Doom on in the car, and they would listen to it because it's got all the funny cartoon skits and stuff. And then they kind of start listening.
That theme song, like his name's Doom.
Yeah, that's their favorite theme. Benzie Box. They love it. My daughter sings it in the back. She free fell to the other bit. She loves it. Do you know what I mean? But saying that. She was freestyling to your album the other day as well. So,
So your daughter's gonna be an MC.
She's got the musical ear. I got some headphones in the other day. She took my phone and listened to your new instrumental project, and I think she was rapping to Say. I think it was. I heard her walk off into the garden, and she's like, started just going on. I'm just like, cool, let her go.
Yeah. But
I think my boy's got the multis, though, because he'll sit there and just kind of say words that they don't make any sense, but you can hear that he's playing on the vowels. Do you know what I mean? He's
Yeah, definitely getting the rhythm of it together.
Yeah, yeah.
gonna have a couple of MCs in your house.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's funny, but we'll see. Maybe
house full of rappers. House full of rappers.
Yeah.
Maybe your kids are gonna feature on your next album.
Me? They already will. Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
If I can trust them in the fucking studio, I don't know. They're too much. Kids are too much.
So, but what are the people saying? I can't see anything, Rob, man. You've got
there was a question that we had a little while ago that's completely, oh shit, it's gone. What was the question? Someone said, Nika said, who is your biggest inspiration?
Man, it's tough. I mean, I always start with Slick Rick because that's who made me rap in the first place when I heard him. Roots Maneuver, I have to mention, like that when I heard his music, that sort of, that made me go from being an MC that just was, you know, messing around with it to actually, oh, I actually want to do this and find my own voice. Because he was so unique in his style that it's like, well, I want to find my own voice. Like obviously Guru, Gangstar as a group, that, you know, that was another sort of part of the puzzle to making me actually want to be an MC and really do it. I guess those are the main ones.
Did you have a defining moment when you was like starting off that made you want to get into it?
You know what? When you say that, one that springs to mind is kind of random, but. And rest in peace to Ty, because it was at Jazz Cafe and Ty was hosting an open mic. And I was there with Young Gun and Devise, who are Duper Styles, and Mice Diggy, who was Maestro at the time. And we all just went along to this open mic and we all got on the stage. And funnily enough, the guy that was on the piano was Weldon Irving, like famous jazz musician who did the original break for a award tour by a Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, wow.
And so he was playing keys in the band, and it was like this open mic. And I remember spitting my verse, got a real good response from the crowd, and I just went to walk off. And then Ty grabbed me on the shoulder. He's like, "What are you doing? Telling me your name?" I was like, "Oh right, yeah, you have to." And so that always stuck with me. Like, damn, how many times have I just been up and just rapped and walked away? So, but that was it was important because obviously I knew who Ty was and looked up to him. Jazz Cuff is like a great venue. It's one of the first times I really remember like the crowd reacting to lines and then just really being that into it. So that was like that stuck in my memory like that for a reason. It obviously really meant something to me. So yeah, I say rest in peace to Ty because he really pushed people forward. He never hated on anyone. He never tried to bring people down. He always encouraged people coming up. Yeah, that was a moment for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's wicked, man. It's nice to hear these kind of stories from people. It kind of brings it down to like a humbling level, and it all makes it kind of human. I think people get caught up in like, this is for anybody, do you know what I mean? Like any musician and stuff, they just kind of place them on a pedestal, but everyone starts somewhere, do you know what I mean? You all have that kind
of course, yeah. Yeah, you know I mean? No,
the origin story.
Yeah, you know, man, people are all the same. Like, no one's better than anyone at all. Like, everyone's the same.
No.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, no, some people are pricks, aren't they? But, like, you know, that's just... like,
what are you going to do, though?
I think people's skill is admirable, but it doesn't make them a more worthy human being, you know? People can not be famous and have certain skills and still be even more respectable, you know? It's like people get too caught up in fame and being known and things. I don't know. I'm going off on one there. But
No, carry on. It's good.
Hey, man. I couldn't agree more, man.
That's what... I think, who is it telling me that? Madlib, and that's what Madlib says. Like, oh, we're all human. Yeah, that's... Is what I think it was Pitch actually when he met Madlib, and Madlib was like, "Oh man, we're all human, like you know."
It's level playing field at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh man, well, Madlib, is he human though?
Well, he's got a superhuman capability.
Yeah, he's god tier beat maker, man. Like, we went to see him and Freddie Gibbs, didn't we, a few years back?
Yeah.
Was that for Pinata or was that for Bandana? I can't remember now. Bandana won it, I think.
I don't know. I was there.
Yeah, they did a sick set because, like, Freddie Gibbs, the way his stage presence is so intense, it's just like, have you seen him live before?
I've never seen him live, no. I would like
it's
to.
Matt, it's like nuts. Dolomite or someone, just like, so like intense, just he's like, you know,
his delivery on stage is just the same as it is on a record, and it's intense. And he's jumping around the whole time, and it's
crazy, man.
Yeah, like, I've tried to jump around and rap, and it's I don't know, I think I even fell over. Like, it's just too much. But he's there, just going nuts the whole time. It's really good live. But yeah, that was a good experience.
And that's a tangent as well. So you were saying about new movies, Verb. So have you heard Freddie Gibbs is going to be in a new movie called Down with the King, where he kind of moves to like a farm. I'm not sure whether he plays himself or if it's like semi-autobiographical, but it's kind of like an 8 Mile situation. But yeah, it's Freddie Gibbs living on a farm. And if you watch a trailer, it just looks like really wholesome. Do you know what I mean? It's just like someone sent it to me, and I was just like, this looks really good. Unexpected, but like really, really good. So yeah, maybe that's one to watch. We'll look out for.
I will check that out. I'm interested to see what he's like as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, if his music videos are anything to go by, I mean, it's just the production levels and all of that stuff. He's got so much charisma. He's just one of those rappers, I think. He can just, yeah, him and Madlib was another match made in heaven. Like, when I first heard Pinata, I was just like, this is just, yeah, absolutely fucking amazing. Just like a perfect combination of, like, it's very, like, you know, like when you have, like, Mad Villainy, like a rapper like Doom, and how Madlib brought the best out of him, but again, very stream of consciousness, very kind of like cerebral and surreal and abstract. Freddie Gibbs is just like straight like fuck drug raps, but the wordplay is just, it's just so fucking precise. It just works so well, and that's I guess a sign of a good producer. But yeah, I love that shit. Anyway, I'll do that. Another tangent, man. So should we wrap things up shortly? Are you
I'm gonna bounce quite soon, and
I managed to last. Me and my wife bought a puppy, so I've been crate training it. So like, I've managed to escape for like 2 hours.
Oh man, you basically got a newborn baby in the house.
Pretty much, yeah.
Constant attention required.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. But no, I appreciate you coming through for a chat, man. I'm glad all is well, and like, you know, good to hear the new music's coming out soon. You got a gig coming up on Friday as well, don't you? I saw with Strange U.
Oh, that's right, yeah, in Bedford, and also Dima. Like, I don't know if you guys have heard Dima's music, but he's really dope too. So yeah, it's me, Strange U, and Dima on Friday. Yeah, that should be a good one. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, man, that's a new name. So Dima, and I've got Roxfo. Those are the two people I'm googling later. Nice one, man. So what, anything else in the pipeline before we wrap up?
Not so far. I'm trying to write a couple of other things, non-musical things, so that's I don't know. When I have more to say about that, we can.
Oh,
we
man,
can
talk come on.
No. There's a book about a specific thing that I'm trying to get into writing. So I'll talk more about that once I'm further down the line with it. I don't want to say, oh, I'm writing this book about this, and it never comes out. I have a few ideas, a couple further along than others. So when there's more to talk about, we'll do this again for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and a couple of other things. So I'm trying to, I'll always be doing music, but I'm trying to expand to other areas of writing as well, basically. So that's one of my next steps that I'm looking at from here.
Any plans to do anything in the local area in Bournemouth?
You know what? In July, we'll be doing an open mic at a place called the Four Horsemen in Bournemouth. So mm-hmm. I'll be hosting an open mic. I think it's July 3rd, but it'll be posted up properly. So yeah, there's limited space for that. But yeah, that should be pretty good, I think. That should be pretty good. I'm looking forward to it.
If I'm down, I might pop in.
That'd yeah, come through. Come through.
Yeah, if I'm down. Because like, I usually visit in the summer, innit? Like, see my parents and stuff. But yeah, if I'm down, I'm down. But yeah, we'll try to hook some music up soon, yeah. Definitely.
All right, man. Well, respect for coming through, man. We'll let you get off. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, yeah, man. We'll do it again. We'll do it again.
Peace, bro.
Nice to chat with you guys, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Take care. Cheers, man.
Take care.
All right, peace.
Right. And we're out.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still here. But I need to sack it off.
Not for long, man. I'm surprised I made the duration. Right, anyway. Yeah, thanks for listening, people. Sorry we didn't engage as much as we could have done. We're still quite new to this. But yeah, just keep firing questions at us. I couldn't actually see them, so that's Rob's bad. But...
What the fuck did I do? I ain't do nothing.
I can't see anything on it, man, because I'm a guest. Right. I'm a guest technically on my own podcast.
I'm the boss, innit?
See what happens. All right, people, hope you enjoyed that, and we'll tune in next week.